episode of the Wagging Tales podcast. On this episode, we're going to be talking about harmony in public spaces, basically how we navigate the intersection between public, between children, between the community, between our dogs. This is something that everybody, no matter which country you're in, no matter what situation you're in, whether you have a dog or whether you don't have a dog, this impacts you because it's the most common pet in the world. So of course, we're going to be impacted by this, whether you've got a dog or not. Now, this topic came to me through an interesting one. I was approached by Yahoo News for this very topic. There was a situation in Singapore quite recently where there was a child inside a dog park and the child was bitten by a dog. So, first of all, you can unpack that in many ways, but we're not going to do that straight away. We're just going to take a look at that being the fact. Child in a dog park, bitten by a dog. There's also a number of other situations that I had a wee look at. Situations where people have been in parks, and this one actually almost sounds like a comedy. People are in the park, dog runs up to them while they're having a picnic, destroys the picnic. Okay, that's another one as well. Then you've got things like children being scared, people being scared, dogs being scared. One of the biggest ones that I've seen personally was somebody walking their nervous dog, a child running up to that dog and screaming at the dog. The dog didn't do anything to the child, but now the child has just traumatized that dog. You might think traumatized is a strong term, Fraser. Are you sure that's the one you're going for? Well, it depends on the dog. If that dog already has an anxious disposition, yeah, the dog could become traumatized. And moreover, that experience with that child has now become a trigger, meaning that other children coming in contact with that dog are now at risk. So when I'm talking about this, I'm not just talking about the safety of children. I'm not just talking about the safety of the community. And I'm not just talking about the safety of our dogs. I'm talking about this harmony that we need to try and gear towards, because without that, there's always going to be problems. So first off, we're going to take a look at what actually causes these issues, right? The first thing is you've got to remember that dogs communicate through body language. Now, yeah, they've got barks, yelps, whines, all that stuff, but the majority of their communication is through body language and facial features and things like that. So somebody's screaming at the dog is not going to have the effect that you want, because even if somebody's trying to be angry, if they're scared, that's going to come across to the dog louder than the verbal attack. So if that dog sees an animal who's far larger than them being scared, that dog's going to go on the defensive. Contrary to what a lot of people think, the dog's not going to assume that the person's scared, so they're going to run away. No, you've got freeze, flight, and fight. The dog sees a larger animal that's showing fear. The fear response is freeze, flight, or fight. The larger animal is quite likely to pick fight in order to get rid of the threat, which in this case is the dog. The dog doesn't understand that we are soft as a species as compared to what we were thousands of years ago. So they're going to respond in the most appropriate way that they see fit. If the dog's on a leash, it cannot run, it cannot hide. That leaves one thing, and that is to fight, which is why you tend to get dogs being quite leash reactive, to people that respond negatively to them. So understanding simple things like that, understanding that when a dog looks away from a child running towards it or licks its lips or the hackles come up or the tail gets tucked or the tail's high and wagging, none of these things mean that the dog wants to play. So understanding the very basics of canine communication and understanding the basics of what they actually do and how they communicate, and understanding that those early cues can save a lot of problems, you know. So we've got to bear that in mind quite seriously. And this is not just people that own dogs. This is people that don't own dogs as well, that want to be out in areas where dogs are there quite often. So moving on to how we actually can help this. This is the biggest thing when it regards to dogs ownership. Sorry, this is the biggest thing with regards to dog ownership, in that early socialization with humans, children, other dogs, emphasizing interactions in a positive way is paramount. Now, previously, you used to just get given a list, and that list was things that you've got to expose your dog to. Now we know better with the much greater knowledge that we have on canine psychology and behavior. We now know that it's not enough just to be exposed. Now, in hindsight, we probably should have figured this out a lot quicker, because just because we get exposed to something doesn't mean that we're automatically going to be happy with it. So we've got to have positive exposure gradually to external stimulus to have appropriate socialization. It's not a case of just shoving your dog into the dog run or exposing your dog to screaming children. There's a lot more to this. We've got to be sure that as we introduce our dogs, they are seeing these this stimulus, this external stimulus, as a positive. So that's going to be a big part of what people have to do to ensure that their dogs are safe around the public and around children. So moving to strategies for dog owners to manage their pets in public so that they're reducing stress and preventing negative behaviors from their dogs. The first thing is you've got to know your dog. You can't just expect your dog to be fine and not even try to understand them better. So you've got to know your dog. Is your dog the type of dog that enjoys being around children? If not, try not to go places where children are around. It's just not fair on your dog. If you're not the type of person that likes big crowds, you wouldn't be very happy if people continuously took you to music concerts. We've got to be fair to our dogs, understand who they are, because every dog is different. So with regards to people living in cities like Singapore, like London, like Hong Kong, like wherever you are, if you're in a big city, understand that we can't just expect your dog to be okay out. Now, this goes for everybody, but especially in cities, because there's so much going on. So we've got to be able to read our dogs. We've got to be able to understand where our dogs are coming from. And that is our biggest responsibility, to make sure that we are advocating for our dogs. Now, with that said, you hear a lot of people, and I've been guilty of saying this myself as well, saying, don't take your dog to dog parks. Dog parks are not awesome. This is true. Dog parks do have the potential to become doggy fight clubs. You're putting a whole lot of strange dogs into a penned area, not necessarily ideal. However, when You are living in a very urbanized landscape. When there's nowhere else for your dogs to explore, to play, to roam, to socialize, places like Singapore, where the leash laws are effectively only let your dog off leash in a dog park, your choices are limited at best. So dog parks do come into play there. So what we've got to understand is that when we're taking our dogs to the dog park, what do we need to do as dog owners to make sure that we are doing the best we can? If our dogs are not overly social, if our dogs don't like being around people or don't like being around children, take them at times where it's less busy, where it's easier to monitor them, where it's easier to make sure that they are okay. So that's a big one straight off the bat, on top of appropriate socialization. Now, when I say appropriate socialization, that's not just for puppies, that's for dogs of all age, and quite frankly, that should continue throughout their life. But we've also got training elements that we should be working on as dog owners. Biggest one, the simplest one, recall. Recall is so important and so under-trained with so many dogs. And there really is a lot of different ways and fun ways to teach this this command. In fact, we've got a great, well, I'm not going to say great because it's my video, but we've got a video on our website which actually shows how to do this. And I actually gave all of the information needed to teach this. So it wasn't like a teaser, it's actually an instructional video on how to do this. So what I'll do is I'll post that in the comments on the Facebook Live, and I will also put it in to the show notes so that people can have a look at that in their own time as well. Because it is incredibly important, and it is something that everybody should work on with their dog. And if you're having trouble with it, if there's something that's not quite working, please feel free to reach out to us or reach out to somebody else that can help with that. There really is no reason not to work on recall with your dog. It could save their life and it could help you have a lot less stress when you're out with your dog. So, training, you've got recall, you've got stay, you've got stop, you've got leave it. All of these are very, very useful when your dog is around other people, other dogs, and of course, children. On top of that, we can do desensitization exercises, desensitization exercises. This means that instead of your dog necessarily having the triggers as a positive association, they just don't care. Now, I would never say pick counter conditioning or desensitization over each other. What I would say is work both of them in tandem for any trigger, because you don't necessarily want your dog to react. If you do counter conditioning too excitedly, then your dog might become overexcited towards children, and that in itself is a form of reactivity. So we've got to be aware of that as well. These are the same techniques that you would use around vehicles, loud noises, things like that. But we are doing it with children playing. And it can be as simple as walking your dog past a busy playground regularly. Start off walking past that playground 50 meters away, the next day 40, the next day 30, the next day 20. Your dog looks a little bit nervous at 20, back out to 30. And you just do this until it gets to the stage where your dog doesn't care. That's a very long way of doing it, but it's a way that doesn't take up that much bandwidth for the owners. And it means that eventually your dog's going to be able to interact without being a potential threat. That's one small way of doing it. There's a lot of other ways that we can and should be doing this with regards to getting our dogs to be okay around children. An example of that would be parallel play. An example of that would be appropriate interaction, where you actually get children to do interactive exercises with the dog in a safe, controlled environment. things to let the dog understand that children are not necessarily a threat. All of these things are things that we as dog owners should be doing for our dog to keep them safe and, of course, children. But what you've got to remember is we can't put all of the onus on the parents, because at the end of the day, if our dog bites a child and that gets reported, it's not the parents that get put down, it's the dog. So we want to do everything we can to ensure that that is not going to happen. So there's other ways we can do this as well, because we've been looking at what we do with the dogs. Now, before we go on to this, I'm going to make sure that it's very clear that this is my opinion. And yes, I am a canine behaviour specialist, and I am a dog trainer, I am a parent, I am a dog owner, and all of these things do mean that I've got an educated opinion on this, but a lot of people might disagree with some of the things I'm about to say, and that's okay, they can disagree. But I feel that one of the biggest things that's missing in daycares, preschools, primary schools, even in secondary schools, is educational programs for children and parents on how to interact safely with animals, not just dogs. Dogs should definitely be included. They're the most common animal in urban areas, but this should be the case for all animals, because you hear stories about people getting gorged by wild boars, getting bitten by snakes, getting attacked by wild dogs, you know, chased by roosters even. But if people were educated on how to behave around animals, the counts for this would be way, way lower. So this is incredibly important, that from a very young age, children are taught how to behave around animals. Now, let's focus on dogs. They should learn not to approach unfamiliar dogs. They should learn to ask the handler before touching a dog on a leash, or before approaching a dog at all off on a leash. They should recognize the simple signs of discomfort. I'm not saying that children need to learn every single calming signal, but simple things like high wagging tail doesn't necessarily mean the dog's happy. Hackles up on the dog's back and butt doesn't necessarily mean it's overexcited. Could mean that it's angry, could mean it's overexcited. Either way, not really a good idea to approach. Tail tucked, scared. Extremely high smile and panting, stressed. Wide eyes, stressed. Things like that are things that my daughter can recognize already, and she's only 3. So there's not an age problem here. Children are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. And if you expose them and you teach them, they can learn that from a very young age. And even now, I was in a very fortunate position where I was invited to my daughter's daycare to teach the 2 and 3-year-olds about dogs exactly on this topic. I only wish I was able to have done it with the parents there as well. So I brought one of my dogs to the daycare, and I let the children, first of all, interact with the fake dog I have, Boris. Some of you that watch these videos will have seen Boris before in the background. He's actually in the car at the moment. Don't worry. I've left him a bowl of water. He's very good in there. But the children were taught how to approach a dog using the false dog first, using Boris first. Then they were taught how to pet the dog once the dog has shown that it's okay. Then they were given the opportunity to do the same with Porthos and actually interact with a real dog who I know is calm and good with children, who I know I've got control of. Now, this gave them a very good opportunity to learn exactly what to do. And now what I've noticed is when children are coming in and out of the daycare, when I'm picking up or dropping off my daughter, a lot of the kids that were with me when I did that still practice it. And this was done probably about a year ago, and they still remember it. So these educational programs for children and parents, these could be a real lifesaver for some kids and some dogs, but it just keeps everyone safer, everyone better informed. And I feel that this is something that's being missed out. that needs to be done. And it's actually something that I'm working on for an online course, because we can go to schools, we can go to daycares, but only so many people get it there. So what I'm planning on doing is giving that platform online where people can learn more about that with their children at their own pace, so that we get better results with a wider scale. That doesn't mean that we're not going to be pushing things in schools and daycares and things like that, but it's so important. Education for children, parents, the public cannot be stressed enough. The next thing that I feel is very important, which is not done enough, is designated areas in dog parks. I know there's already a lot of rules in dog parks, but not just for the safety of kids and things like that, but just for the safety of other dogs as well. There should be an area that's for puppies, an area that's for small dogs, an area that's for big dogs. These are areas that people can go in at their own discretion, so that the puppies are only in there if they're puppies, but if the puppies want to interact with small dogs, they can also try that. But they're going in there at their own risk. Now, you could add something else onto that and say an area of the dog park which is child-friendly. Because in my opinion, children, unless they are there with parents and their own dogs, there is no reason for a child to be let into the dog park. Now, I've seen this. I've seen children just coming into dog parks unattended. They're maybe about 10 to 12. Their parents might be away on a park bench in a different area. And the kids come into the dog park to play with dogs. To me, that's not acceptable, because the dogs don't know the kids. The kids don't know the dogs. It is just a recipe for disaster. But if you had an area of a dog park which was designated to be child friendly, okay, then children can go in there with their parents, knowing that the people that are taking their dogs in there have done all the things that we discussed earlier, that these dogs are going to be friendly with children, or at the very least they should. Then if anything happens, there's at least some form of guidelines which should have been followed, and actually means the back end stuff of blame and fault is a little bit less grey, because at the moment, child gets bitten in a dog park, the question is, why was the child there? Now, the thing with my next point here is a little bit more funny, because it kind of suggests that dog parks would need to be privatized. So it's not something that I am 100% on board with. I kind of feel like it's not actually the best solution, but it would help if that were the case. If you had, say, on-site trainers, or at least behavior specialists, or somebody that could be watching the dog park, almost like a lifeguard at a pool, then that would help as well, because they would be able to say, oh, wait, that dog's not happy, bring them away from the play. Or, nope, children aren't allowed in this section. Now, yeah, that seemed like a big step. It means that it would probably need to be privatized, or at least government funded. But kind of like a swimming pool, if you've got a lifeguard, the swimming pool becomes safer, because they can make sure that the regulations, the measures, the guidelines are actually being followed to keep people safe. Whether or not you think that's a good idea, that's up to you. I think it would make a park a lot safer for children and dogs. I don't necessarily think it's very realistic, although that it certainly is something that would certainly help. So on top of this, you've got things that would definitely help within the public. Campaigns, so like awareness campaigns. There's one that Chain Dogs did for caring for dogs, for like looking out for dogs that are in distress, things like that. It was done very well. If you did something like that for awareness, highlighting safe practices for dog owners and families and being around dogs in public parks, dog parks, wherever. This would be very helpful as well. So instead of just having the signs up saying these breeds are banned or these breeds need to be wearing muzzles, they should also have signs there saying if your child is overexcited, do not allow them to go near the dogs. If your dog is not child friendly, ensure you communicate this to children coming close. You know, simple things where we should be more aware of what we're doing, but sometimes it does need to be reminded. And then, last but not least on this, could quite simply be having surveillance and monitoring. Now, again, this is a strange one, but if you've got surveillance in the public parks, in the dog parks, and something does happen, it means that then it can be reviewed and the action that's needed to stop it from happening again is going to be in place a lot easier than guessing. Because cameras are not just for placing blame or legal action or anything like that. It's more about making sure it doesn't happen again. So that's one that could very, very simply be done in almost any city that has dog parks or any city that has public parks where there's a lot of dogs. These steps are not perfect. I understand that. But it's incredibly important for us to understand that when it comes to safety with the public and our dogs, there is no perfect solution other than complete segregation. And that's not going to happen. Because I know that for me, I love taking my dogs out with my daughter and watching them interact. But if another child runs up, that's just another factor I then need to think about. So personally, what I do, if another child runs up while my dogs are interacting with my daughter, normally I'll call my dogs back and I'll put them on the lead so that I've got a lot more control. So this leads us into what can we do in the moment? Because talking about hypothetically what we can have the greater society do or the government or the whatever we're talking about that they can put in place, that's not going to help the individual in the moment. So now we have to look at etiquette. Now, I've got a video that I did on off-leash etiquette, but that is really targeted to areas where there's a lot more off-leash dogs. However, it does not mean that the same etiquette should not be followed for dogs that are also on lead or on a long line. So what I'll do is I'm going to share that one as well into the comments so people can have a look at that. But the thing about this one is all of that advice should be followed for any situation, not just for dogs and other dogs. If you're walking your dog and you've got your dog on a long line, or you've got your dog fully extended on the lead so that you're at the end of the lead, they're able to have a good sniff. Very important to allow your dog to do that. If you see a toddler running towards you, call your dog back and shorten that leash. It's not about necessarily controlling your dog, but it's allowing your dog to feel safer because they're now closer to you. If your dog's far away from you, they're not going to feel as safe. So it's important that we advocate for our dogs and say, no, no, you're fine, don't worry, you're now with me. I can put you behind me, between you and the potential danger, which in this case might be a toddler, meaning your dog doesn't feel the need to respond. That should be the same with other dogs, with children, with people that are scared of dogs. There's been a few times when I've been walking my dogs that people have basically jumped out of their skin. The dogs are not doing anything. They're just walking beside me. But people are like, oh my God, look at those dogs. And they jump out of their skin. They start screaming and shouting and hollering, which is the worst thing you could possibly do if you're scared of a dog, because you are basically creating excitement and fear, which can result in the dog deciding to bark at you or even lunge at you. So if that happens, You want to be able to make sure your dogs know that you're keeping them safe. They do not need to take action. So that etiquette is very, very important. Okay, so take a wee look at that video if you can. That one, although I talk about off-leash, if you're in a country where there's less off-leash and more on-leash, like Singapore, it will still be applicable. It just might be a case of the dog being on a longer line rather than off-leash completely. So what do we do as soon as there is an incident? Let's say that there has actually been an incident. The first thing we've got to do is actually report the aggressive behaviour. Now, for some dog owners, that seems like a terrible plan. But what you've got to understand is this is not just to keep children safe, it's to keep the dog safe as well. So if your dog has reacted, and hopefully you've been quick enough to stop anything serious from happening, you've got to report that and make sure that you've reported it accurately. A lot of people, including parents, I know that we're all guilty of this as parents, we will talk about things that happen as if our kids haven't done anything wrong. But if a kid's run up to a dog and thrown a stone at them or slapped them on the nose and the dog has snapped at them, that's not the dog's fault. If somebody ran up to me and threw a stone at me, yeah, I'm probably going to say something fairly aggressive towards them. So why do we expect our dogs to be monks when we ourselves are not? So if something like that happens, the authorities need to understand so that they can say, oh, hold on a second, if people are not paying attention to their kids in this area, that can become a problem. It's not necessarily about the dogs. After these incidents have happened, personally, I feel that there should be more support in education for both dog owners and the child's family so that people can understand a little bit more, prevent it from happening again. And even if, for example, it's in an estate, or if it's in a condominium, or it's in a village or anywhere like that, there can be community initiatives and community meetings to help share concerns and experiences and strategies for improving park safety, whether that be the public park or the dog park. Responsible behavior should also be rewarded. As human beings, we're very guilty for punishing bad behavior and ignoring good behavior. It shouldn't be that way. If somebody does something right, it should be made known. If a child comes running up to a dog and the dog owner gets their dog behind them, stops the child and says, hey, if you stop and calm down and ask me politely, you may be able to pet the dog. And then if that happens and that works, fantastic. People should know that that happens more regularly than not, if that may be the case in your area. It's by rewarding that positive behavior, more people will behave in that positive manner. It's literally positive reinforcement. And I don't think anybody listening to this would disagree that positive reinforcement is definitely the way to go, whether that be with people or with dogs. So this is going to be a big part of all of that, is the community, education, making sure that people actually understand what to do. And as much as, of course, I'm definitely going to be trying that with our online platform, the reason I wanted to do a podcast about this was so that people listening to this may talk to their family members that have dogs, maybe talk to themselves within their family about their dog. Maybe they talk to family members that don't have dogs but have kids, or their friends, or anybody else, so that everybody's a little bit more informed, everybody's a little bit safer. And on top of that, what I would say before I call this a night is to watch out for the article that's going to be coming out on dog park safety from Yahoo News. I am quoted in that, but I am very sure that they're going to have other people being interviewed who will give very good input as well. And with that said, guys, fairly short one tonight because I'm alone. There's not been as much back and forth. But I hope that this has been informative. I hope people have enjoyed this. If you have any feedback, any questions at all, do not hesitate to put it into the comments here. If you are listening on Spotify, please put us a few stars in there, hopefully five. If you are listening on any other platform, please rate us, please leave a review, hopefully positive. And if you are very keen, don't hesitate to support us on our Patreon. Everything that we get from Patreon gets straight back into the podcast. We don't make any money from the podcast. It's a very small operation. The reason we do this is to share information, to help people. So if anybody's wanting to support us, to ensure that we can get more guests, ensure that we can get better equipment, to ensure that we can improve the quality of what we do, we would be gratefully, greatly appreciative of any support on Patreon, which I will put into the show notes and into the comments of this live video. Thank you to everybody for watching live. Remember, hit that like button, give us a review, hit that follow. It helps us more than I can say. And until next time, have a good one. Cheers, guys. Oh!